You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Oh yeah, it's great. Like, you're just to relax and just enjoy the silliness of it. So
yeah,
but speaking of non silly stuff, Japan had another major earthquake.
Yeah,
that was
no tsunami though. That's
no,
good.
That was fortunate.
And yeah, no major atomic factory problems.
Yeah, that was the first thing they said. Like, right off the bat, like, right after it happens, like, nope, plants are fine, don't shoot. Yeah, but yeah, they better be. Cause if it was a second, if it happened again, God, I can't imagine what that would be.
That would probably be the end of nuclear power in Japan.
Yeah.
If anybody wonders, yes, I'm kind of pro-nuclear power because it pollution-wise, it does a lot less than like coal or anything else going into the air. And sure, no, I mean, if eventually we have a system capable of like using wind power and solar panel that could supply a nation, that'd be great. Yeah. But you kind of need to be within certain latitudes and longitudes for that.
Yeah.
And guess where a lot of people live.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for the moment, I think it's something we need.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, it's scary, so let's switch to fossil fuels. Like that, isn't that a step back?
Yeah, like yourself, I am pro nuclear power. I mean, I think a lot of the people making decisions their priorities are kind of screwed up.
Yeah.
But I think as long as it's properly maintained, it's perfectly safe.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing is. Well, think about it. Like, how many major disasters have we had, like, in recent memory that, and then even the disasters aren't as bad as they could be? Like, because it was like Chernobyl, which was bad, of course.
Yeah.
Three Mile Island.
Yeah.
And then Fukushima.
Yeah.
And how many years is that over? How many major accidents have we had in, like, since the creation of nuclear power? Three big major accidents?
Yeah.
That's kind of a good run, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure. Surely more coal factories, more coal power plants have had critical failures.
How many coal mines have collapsed?
Have collapsed or permanent coal fires?
Yeah.
Like, there's places in, I think in Pennsylvania where there's been coal fires for decades.
And the whole land is... starts with an S.
You know what I'm talking about.
Centraria, yeah.
Yeah, right?
It's
like, well, that's uninhabitable, just as bad as if it was nuclear power, right? Like a nuclear fallout.
There's Centralia, and there's also that place, I think, where is it Africa or India or something like that, where they've got the hole to hell.
Yeah.
Like, was it like methane or something that's burning forever? Pretty much? Yeah.
And so that's the thing. Like, I do understand, and it's fine if people don't agree. I mean, I wouldn't fight over it or anything.
Yeah.
And sure, when we figure out a way to get basically can get enough efficiency from solar power and stuff like that and wind power and all that stuff that we don't need nuclear power, I'll be the first to switch, right?
Yeah.
But until then, like, if I had to choose between fossil fuels and nuclear power, I'd choose nuclear power.
One of the I hate to call it a fortunate thing because
in a freaking mass disaster.
They had two in a row? It magnitude? I forget what the Richter scale they're on, but in Japanese,
seven something.
Yeah, they're both over seven.
Yeah,
it's a thing, and I don't know how that calculates the Richter scale, but it's pretty up there. It's massive, but they had like two in a row.
Uh-huh.
And, like, they have aerial shots of, like, people's farmsteads where the ground has shifted, like, horizontally. So there's, like, there's this tearing in the in their field.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty freaky.
I haven't seen that. That sounds pretty... Sounds like a cool picture, terrifying as it is.
Yeah. But, I mean, one good aspect of the fact that, like, there were no plant troubles is that the news is able to focus on the people more now.
Yeah.
Than, like, talking about nuclear plant, oh my god, what are you going to do? They can focus on the people. And I think, what, how many people are displaced? It's like 300,000 people are currently, like, living in gymnasiums and, like, places, like, in halls and stuff like that, because they can't go home because their houses are condemned now.
Right. But the good thing is, at least, that's how Japan is built, though. So that if this does happen, there are enough gyms and community centers that are built specifically with the specifications to survive earthquakes. Like, every school gymnasium doubles as a refugee center, pretty much in the whole country, as far as I know. I've never seen one that wasn't like that, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, at least there's, what am I looking for? Infrastructure to support
them. Because,
It's not people wandering around burning ruins wondering where they're going to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
They know where they're going to sleep tonight. It's not going to be super comfortable, and it's not going to be nice, but it is a roof. It's not going to be private, but it's going to be a roof, and there's going to be some food there.
Yeah. And the government also has been getting on there. Like, again, because it's not that we don't have to deal with a power plant failure. The government gets just like get support there, get food there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, March 11th was just so crazy because it was three things, not one. It was big earthquake, tsunami, nuclear power plant problems.
Yeah.
Like, those are three major disasters happening all at the same time. And, you know, we're all sitting there like, oh gosh. And you have to remember that they know what to do right now during like massive earthquakes like this. Like, not only have all buildings since like the mid 80s been designed with really specific specifications so that they won't collapse. Like, you don't really hear often about buildings collapsing from the earthquake itself.
And they're constantly getting better.
And they're getting better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of, you know, they have it worked out now, but like, it means for the first couple days everything grinds to a halt.
Yeah.
Trains do not run anymore. Yeah. And so it's kind of, they do have this fallback infrastructure of like buses, but even the buses running 24 hours a day, people are still stranded for sizable amounts of time.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm proud of how they handle it. And certainly, you know, there's people now on every major street corner collecting donations.
Yeah.
And people do. Like,
I mean, the NHK, Japan News, Japan Broadcasting Network, they have their news is 24/7. They have, like, a banner at the top, like, and on the side, like, giving updates and, like, saying, like, you can donate for support, like, send stuff here and, like, what's going on. And it's been freaky because, like, there have been sizable, like, you know, like I said, there were two major earthquakes in a row. One of them was an aftershock of the other one, but they're still going on constantly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I don't think people really understand that who don't live in earthquake prone areas. I'm from Colorado, and there's no fault lines in Colorado. So my first earthquakes were in Japan. Yeah. And, you know, and I was used to having earthquakes of like, at least that I would feel, maybe once a month, maybe twice a month. But, you know, I never really, you get used to it very quickly.
Yeah.
But after after the big Fukushima earthquake, I remember it was hourly for a long time, daily for almost 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
Where I remember the first day where I went, I was, like, getting into bed, and I was like, holy crap, we didn't have an aftershock today.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
When was the last time that happened?
Yeah. And the thing is that, like, after something that big, once it happens, like, every single slight aftershock that comes after, you freeze. Like, the minute you feel, wait, is it shaking? And you just, like, stop right there. And, like, is this another big one?
Yeah, and I remember, like, every time it's like, I would feel it start, and I was like, all right, up in the doorway, you know? Yeah. That's one of the places that it's good to stand, is in the doorway.
Yeah.
You know, because then if the whole building falls over, you at least have potentially enough room to breathe.
Yeah.
Because of the frame protecting you. And so, yeah, like, I mean, I still do that.
Mm-hmm.
When they come. And you always have that thought of, is this the really big one? Because, neither of us live in where, like, near the epicenter, near where Fukushima was. We live in Tokyo, and we were getting, I was even living further south than now, and what was it, we had, like, 5-somethings?
Yeah.
Well, even like this far away?
Yeah, well, the one that hit Fukushima caused a 5+, like, a strong 5, because, like, the scale is not just, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,
yeah,
it's just like you've got levels within that, and it was a strong 5, which is close to a 6.
Yeah, and so. that was down where we are, not up where. You measure earthquake, or the way the magnitude system works here in Japan is you pick the magnitude at your area.
Yeah.
Right. So it was a 7-something in Fukushima, right?
Yep.
And but strong for 7. Us, by the time it got to us, it was a strong 5. And we're how far away?
We're, God,
100 kilometers or more?
Something, more than that, I think. But yeah, it's a ways away, and
So I mean, it's a trip. It's like a day in the car to get to Fukushima from here.
Yeah,
and that's how big it was. Obviously, now, you know, we didn't feel anything from this current one. It's 6 hours away on the train on another island.
Yeah, it's a full day's, if more.
Oh, no, I guess it is more than 6 hours, because, like, I think I've done it before in one sitting, and it was 8 hours on the bullet train, I think.
Yeah, it's a full, like, going by car, it's more than a day.
Oh,
like,
it's absolutely more than a day.
Yeah, you're going to stop at a hotel. But, yeah, but ironically, well, not ironically, but coincidentally, I guess is the word I'm looking for, is that Tokyo had not a huge one, but I think it was like a strong 3 or 4 right before the huge one hit Kumamoto, hit Kyushu.
What time did it hit?
I think we had like a strong 3 or 4, like around 10 or 11-ish.
Yeah, because I don't even remember it.
Yeah, and they had it midnight, I think, around there. Like it was like people were at home sleeping when it happened, which is, I guess, like, depending on how you look at it, it's either good or a bad. Because like people weren't stranded at work.
Yeah. Yeah, and not like what it was when the Kanto one hit.
Yeah. So a lot of people were at home.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. Then altogether, like, the number of deaths is still the confirmed number of deaths is in the 20s.
Really? So, is it that low?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, injured is way more.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But, like, confirmed deaths is in the 20s.
That's great. Because I remember, even in the hours after the big one, you know, we start to get the toll, and they're like, oh, it's a couple hundred. And I'm like, wow, that's really bad. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, now it's time for tsunami deaths.
Oh, God.
And
I shouldn't be laughing, but oh, my God, that was
that, a nightmare. It's almost so crazy. You have to laugh because you're like, it's one of those things where, like, human nature, you don't know how to react to that. You know how to react when one person is killed or two people. Yeah. But when you start seeing hundreds, you just, your mind is no longer quite capable of, like, putting the gravity that it would need to. Like, you feel sad for the death of one person, but you don't feel 300 times more sad for the death of 300 people, right? Yeah. And you get to some point and you're just like, that's a lot of dang people, right?
Yeah.
You don't know how to quite register it.
Yeah. But, yeah, and one of the unfortunate things, I'm bringing this down.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing was that because there were, like I said, there were 2 earthquakes, and there were, like, there's a few days between them, or a day or so between them, and that's, the thing is that, like, some of the people who died had gone home, and then the second earthquake hit, and their houses collapsed.
Yeah. It yeah, was, that's the risk.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's pretty much, like, I was in an elementary school, actually, when the big one hit.
Mm.
And had to help the kids get out, right?
Oh, yeah.
And like, that was the big thing was, though, get them out, like, orderly, calmly, get them out, because the aftershock is coming.
Yeah.
Or this was just the pre-shock.
Yeah,
and you never know when that first one hits, whether it's like, you know, the one that comes before the big one, or if that was the big one. And granted, yeah, no, maybe I would say 3 to 4 minutes after that one, we had one that was easily in the four.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the thing. Like, if for those first couple of days, and we never knew, and yeah, obviously, like it could have been another big one any moment.
Yeah.
So this is what happens when mankind gets so used to the fact that the Earth is unstable that they go, you know what? Yeah, sure, the Earth is tearing itself apart below my feet, and I feel it on a regular basis, but I'm willing to chance it. Let's build our civilization here. And welcome to Japan.
Right? Yep. So speaking of Japan, this is the Wayward Podcast. I'm Toshi. Yep.
I'm Richard.
And that's starting off us off on a bleak note.
Mm-hmm.
Not a
happy week.
No. Trying to pick this up. We have a few more requests. Also, I would like to address Peter Cypers, who requested that we watch talk about Black Lagoon. I have watched the entire series.
Oh, you got it done.
Yep, nice. I watched the entire series. The thing is that we also have another request by Aaron, who's 2 A's, A-A-R-E-N, who on Twitter wants us to talk about Cowboy Bebop. And
don't people not want to listen to me talk about Cowboy Bebop?
I actually want you to. I want you to get your opinion out because see you get crucified. But
well, it's one of those things where we've set it up like that. I hate Cowboy Bebop. No.
No, you don't. No.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's the Second Coming.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I don't think you should... I think you should watch it. I think you should enjoy it. And I think it does a lot of things great. But I don't think that after Moses came down from the mountain, after Moses came down from the mountain, I thought I said Noah. After Moses comes down from the mountain with the stone tablets, he said, "All right, here are the commandments from God, but hold up, I got a VHS, I got to go back up and get it, and I have brought you Cowboy Bebop." I don't think that's quite how it happened, which I would think a lot of anime fans of my generation and the younger generation would say. Yeah. So but that's a thing. Yeah, that's a whole topic.
But the thing is that both Cowboy Bebop and Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
I recognize this in Black Lagoon watching it, is that they have elements that will resonate with an American audience that by nature of an American audience will really glom onto. So yeah. I think we can talk about both of those together and talk about a few other series that do the same thing. So
yeah,
we can save that for...
There are some where I see an anime, I see like a picture from it, and I'm like, that's going to be popular in America. Because Cowboy Bebop, you know?
Yeah.
I look at something, like, if I looked at Black Lagoon, or I looked at, what was this one's? Dimension W?
Yeah, Dimension W.
I looked at that, I was like, that's gonna go.
Gangsta, same thing. I believe, I haven't seen it, so I can't say, but the faint aroma was there, was it Jorgmund?
I never watched that one, but I hear
I get
that
the feeling. Yeah, you know, like just everything I heard about it, just like this gives me the impression that a Cowboy Bebop fan would enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But
this is not saying that that's a bad thing. It's just kind of it's one of those things you've noticed. You notice that you can tell very easily what's going to tickle the fanboy Bebop thing. Yes, and I did call it that. Deal with it.
Yeah, but another one that Aaron mentioned was Majin Tante no Gami Neuro. And you probably have you heard of this one?
No.
So yeah, I believe it got an anime, though I don't know how long it was. It's one of the Jump series from Shonen Jump. Okay. It was a manga series.
Uh-huh.
It was one of those mystery ones along the lines of Detective Conan, yeah, or Kindaichi Tante.
Sure.
It was a detective series about a demon who has basically who consumes mysteries. He consumes the concept of mysteries.
This sounds familiar.
And he basically consumed all the mysteries that there were to consume in the demon world, so he came to the human world.
Hmm.
And basically opens up a detective agency.
Interesting.
And he uses a young girl as his avatar. He has her act as the detective, and he's just the assistant.
Okay.
So basically he sets her up as the, you know, this human shield.
Right. Genius detective, yeah.
Yeah, well, when she's really just a normal girl, but he's like, he builds her up, and then he it's a Detective Conan thing. He actually solves the mysteries. And I've read the manga up to a certain point,
mm-hmm,
but I never really finished it. I know that that as is the nature of most Jump mangas, they probably have made an anime of it. I can't really, unfortunately, I'm not too familiar with it, and I have my own biases, which is kind of why I stopped reading it. So I can't really give it justice. I can't really give it a yay or nay. It was just that for me, at a certain point, I saw a lot of things that I was used to and at the point, frankly, tired of.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sort of faded out for me.
Mm. Yeah, Jump, there's some Jump ones I've gone all the way for. Mm. Like, I did all of Naruto. Mm-hmm. Granted, I did about, the first fourth of it, quit, mm-hmm, and then came back and did it when it finished. Mm. But I have done all of Naruto. Mm. And it's very odd. I tend to like the offbeat ones, mm, the ones that don't quite get the super following. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my favorites is Pretty Face. You probably don't even know what that is.
No.
Yeah, there, you want to go obscure Jump, you go, yeah, Pretty Face. It's one of the most outlandish, like, rom-coms you'll ever come across. Mm. And it's one of my favorites just because of how silly it is and how, like, and how they do it. Like, how the whole thing comes together. And, yeah, it's one of those that, you know, it wasn't super popular. And so it totally does not fit standard Shonen Jump thing.
Yeah.
But when it was clearly coming to an end, they gave it enough time to end. It didn't just stop.
Hmm.
And so you end up kind of getting a pretty solid story out of it. If you want a really silly rom-com, it's a shortest possible way of saying the plot. Guy has a guy who's kind of like the wild guy with the heart of gold, you know? Everybody thinks he's like a gangsta, but he's
the rebel with the heart of gold.
Yeah, everybody thinks he's going to be like super mean or vicious or something, because he looks kind of scary and big. But he's, you know, he'll fight, but he fights because, like, you know, it's for good, basically. Yeah. And it's no superpowers, no nothing like that. But he, you know, he's had this crush on this girl for the longest time. And, but, you know, everybody's kind of afraid of him because he's the big Yankee, scary fighter guy. Mm. And, of course, high schooler, because
For people who just kind of a question mark appeared in their head. Yankee is the Japanese term for a bully or basically someone who's pretty much a delinquent.
Delinquent's a good term. That's a good way of putting it, yeah. And so, you know, they expect him to be the troublemaker, based on how he looks and how he dresses.
Yeah. And, so if you hear something, that term in Japan, like calling somebody a Yankee, it's not as an insult to an American Yankee. It's a word that the Japanese
they have appropriated.
Kind of appropriated, but means something completely different.
Yeah, so. And that happens. That happens. Yeah. There's a whole section of words. Good old waseigo. That's what it's called. Those kind of words. Yeah. But yeah, so basically he's had this crush on this girl, so much so that he actually has a picture of her in his wallet, right?
Mm.
And one day, he's riding home on a bus, mm-hmm, and bus accident. And everybody dies except him. And his body is so badly burned that, and all the other bodies are so badly burned that even though he's the only survivor, nobody can tell anything about him.
Mm-hmm.
And
the more you describe this,
to save his life, to save his life, the kind of crazy plastic surgeon who they get to do skin grafts and plastic surgery comes in and decides to rebuild his body based on the picture found in his wallet.
His wallet, right.
So even though he's clearly a guy, he still has that anatomy. He's given the face of the girl who he's always had a crush on.
Right.
And, of course, the trick is when he comes out of... He's in a coma for a year, I believe. And when he comes out of it, you know, he's no longer a buff guy, right? He has severe muscle atrophy.
Yeah.
So he has a very feminine figure just from that. And he has the face of this girl. And he tries to find his family. They've moved. They thought he was dead. They didn't want to live in the house where their kid was alive, right?
Yeah.
Perfectly understandable thing. Yeah. And as he's walking around, though... he runs into the girl he liked, right?
Yeah.
And he has her face, right? And looks like her, only his hair is white from the trauma of the car crash, while hers is black. And they look at each other. They make eye contact. He stammers, getting ready to say something. And she responds with, "Big sister, you've come home."
I remember this. I've seen, I've read this.
And this is Pretty
God.
Face. And, yeah, I remember. And it's basically the story of how he decides that he's forced into this position of pretending to be the sister of the girl he loves while trying to find the real sister and not destroy her soul.
God.
And it's called Pretty Face. And it's, so there you go. There's the one thing you never wanted to learn about on this podcast. But if you want an off the wall, weird, tiny, short little Shonen Jump thing that you've never heard of, it's called Pretty Face.
Yeah, well, if they can find it, if it's still in print.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it ever got localized, honestly.
Well, anything that Jump generally got a manga release somehow, so I doubt it got localized. But if you, I mean, if you look in at a used bookstore, you might find a copy if you're lucky.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure.
But yeah, this one was pretty obscure. I do remember it. Oh my god, yeah.
Hey, congrats! You're the third person I've ever met who's read Pretty Face.
Well, like right off the bat, I didn't. But when you started talking about like the accident and his face change, I was like, wait a minute, wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. You know, it's that whole thing where it's the jokes of how far can they push it so that he appears feminine. Because he doesn't have breasts, right?
Yeah. And he has a little something extra.
Yeah, he does have the male genitalia as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, and it's like, oh no, they're going on a trip to a hot springs. How is he going to make it through this kind of thing? So it's very silly.
Yep.
And a lot of fun. And but of course, it survives. The reason I actually really enjoy it is it really has heart, right?
Mm.
He's trying his best to... basically set it up like he's staying with the face that's not his own to keep this girl happy and hopefully find the real sister and be able to switch her into the situation.
Yeah.
Right.
And so he can go back
and get his face back. But yes, it's very funny. And of course the mad scientist doctor is perfectly like is super happy to have, you know, his androgynous man woman. He's like, oh, you sure you don't want to stay like that? Become my bride? And he's like, no, I'm a guy. Bugger off.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. It's good stuff.
Okay.
That's what we didn't need to talk about. So mark that off the schedule of things we weren't supposed to talk about today.
Another thing about, I forgot to mention this about Noogami Naruto, is that it's by the same author of Assassin Class. I think that's called, Ansatsu Kyoshitsu.
Yeah, Assassination Classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Assassination Classroom. It's by the same author.
I haven't read any of that stuff.
And he generally, like, even Assassination Classroom itself, he does stuff off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. His stuff is kind of a little weird, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't feel like it should work, but it works for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Before Assassination Classroom, he did... Majin Tante Noogami Naruto, and I think there was another series before that. I can't really remember, but I think he had another series that I read. I may be mistaken. I'll have to look it up. But yeah, so I mean, that's all I can really say about Noogami Naruto. It's off the beaten path, a little weird, but it's a detective one. Mm-hmm. It's a detective series. Mm-hmm. If you like those, might be worth checking out.
Yeah.
If you like Assassination Classroom, you might enjoy it.
Probably.
So, I mean, same guy, same aesthetic, so...
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that authors... Most of them, anyway, the successful ones who don't sit on a series for an eternity, they usually have more than one good idea, you know?
Yeah.
And that they're willing... And if you give them a chance, they're usually pretty darn good.
Mm. Alrighty, and we actually have one more request and comment, but I'm going to save that one a little bit later because I want to read the entire thing. We'll get back to that. And I think this is a good time to go on our little break, and we can get back to talking about the rest of the Gundam series.
Yeah, get into my area of expertise. AU for life.
And we are back to talk about the AU, the alternate universe of Gundam.
The many alternate universes of Gundam.
Yes. Although it's not as plentiful as the original, the UC. I think we can spend a little more time on individual series.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, there aren't quite as many, but there's a lot. But yeah.
Oh yeah. So the AU, the alternate universe Gundams, were something that came out when I can only speculate on this, but I think Sunrise, the creators, had kind of hit a brick wall. They'd ended what was the most popular part of Gundam, which was the rivalry between the two main characters of the original Gundam, Amuro and Char. Mm-hmm. Their rivalry had come to an end, and they'd started, you know, delving into some other stuff with, like, 0080, 0083, 08 MS Team, but they're kind of running short on ideas.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing really solid that they could create a real full series.
Yeah, they had, like, hit the end, right?
Yeah, I mean, Victory Gundam, F91, those had failed to really get a foothold. Like, people were not as interested anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
now that
Char's counterattack was done, and what had followed was F91, which was so far in the future that didn't quite do it. Same with Victory Gundam, pretty far in the future.
Yeah. And so they just went, and the restrictions, it's kind of like Star Trek when, you know, Star Trek at the real series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine. Then it went to Voyager, and the technology and the stuff that happened in Voyager. As a viewer, see when it ended, because I didn't see the entire series, but I saw, like, bits and pieces of it, of Voyager, and just, like, some of the stuff they were doing was going so far beyond that, like, how do you... It was reaching levels of anything beyond this, just you can't, as a viewer, you can't really connect with it anymore.
Right, because, I mean, while Voyager did do some very good things with, like, the Borg, especially 7 of 9, they also did the problem, they also did the thing where you can't use the Borg very much, right? Because the whole point of the Borg was, like, they walk in the Next Generation and decimate the Federation with one ship. Like, that's how powerful they are. And the only way we win is just a trick, basically. Yeah. A backdoor subroutine, right? They just happened to have side effects that were beneficial for us and had us win, right? That was how we beat them. It was luck more than anything, right? And that's how it's portrayed, is it's not, we're good, we're lucky. That's what it was. And who knows how we'll deal with it the next time. That was kind of the thing. And at first, like Voyager, the first couple times they used the Borg, it was going through their space or whatever was very scary, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh man, Voyager doesn't have a chance in here. And then you get like near the last couple episodes of the Borg, and you have Voyager like killing several, you know, cubes, just, like, and you're like, what?
Wiping the Earth. Yeah,
you're like, it used to take 40-something ships to do, like, 40-something ships couldn't destroy one Borg ship, and now Voyager, little crap Voyager is doing this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, like, granted, it is, like, this futuristic test ship, and they, you know, and they're doing all this stuff, and they're in a part of space they've never been before, but the problem is that they get back to Earth. They bring all that with them.
Did you just spoil Voyager? People are going to be pissed. We're going to get letters.
It's about a trip home. Like, if it didn't end happy, we would have, like, heard about it.
Yeah. Like, probably the biggest problem with Voyager was the fact that they didn't get home sooner.
Yeah. They basically did the Dragon Ball thing. It was a power inflation, and they made this god machine. Mm-hmm. They brought the technology home.
Yeah,
and so now the Earth Federation has this god technology. Everything that comes after is going to have to incorporate that somehow now.
Yeah,
which is why, interesting enough, there are no series after Voyager.
Yeah, well, no, and that's kind of the thing. Like, I mean, just think about like the what was it? The Doctor's hollow emitter. Yeah. Very necessary plot device for the Doctor to break out and be an awesome character. I don't say anything bad about it, but what it does then is, that's a piece of 29th century technology, right? When they do finally get home, like, think about what that is. Yeah. Like, think about if you had, I don't even know, like, of something similar. I guess a bigger jump, like, something similar would be, like, somebody... like gunpowder, maybe? Like it would be like, oh, I've come to the past and I have a firework, a modern day firework, before the invention of gunpowder, but they have at least the capacity of knowing, being able to identify different substances.
Yeah.
So they know how to get the sulfur and get that stuff. You change the world, right?
Yeah.
Like, the Doctor's emitter should change, like drastically alter the technology level of the Federation, even if it's just, you know, from a couple things.
Yeah.
So I agree. And we're going to bring this back to Gundam, I promise. We're bringing it back right now.
Yeah. So, they tried that with, like, going back to the past, which is what they're doing with Star Trek now. They're like, the next series is going to be between the original and Next Generation. But Gundam, they went with 0080, which is something that happened towards the end of the original series. Mm-hmm. They did 0083, which happens in between the original Gundam and Zeta Gundam. But
they were running low on stories for...
Yeah.
Like, going into the future wasn't working. They'd filled in all the holes.
Yeah.
What comes next?
Yeah. So they started an entire new series that is in a different universe, but has Gundams. And that was G Gundam.
Yep. Mobile Fighter G Gundam.
Yeah.
You love this one. I really am.
It is a very decisive one because it was... really weird, really outlandish, and it didn't... It was... I mean, a lot of people watched it kind of... The impression I got was, like, a lot of people watching it like, this is kind of funny, what is this? This is a novelty. But it has garnered a strong fan base. But, like, a devoted fan base, where there's, like, people who...
I'll say devoted. Like, I don't know if I'd say strong, but I would say devoted.
Yeah. It's a post-apocalyptic world where the colonies rule the Earth, and the thing is that the colonies, like, each nation has its own calling now. There's countries.
So we have like Neo Japan, Neo America, Neo America,
Another thing I should mention is this series is racist as fuck.
Yeah, like that's what I was gonna say. It's like, you have to understand, like, this is 80s or early 90s racial stereotype Gundam. Yeah. So, you're going to want some examples. All right. Yeah. The French Gundam has a Napoleon hat.
Yeah.
And, like a shoulder cape. Because French people are all like Napoleon, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what French people are. And what is it? Dude, the
American Gundam has six shooters.
Right.
It's wearing a football helmet. Its shoulder pads come off to become boxing gloves.
Right.
It rides a skateboard.
Isn't there a sombrero on the Mexican one?
Yep. The Russian one is the first of all. The pilot is a prisoner. It looks like what it's wearing, like a Cossack hat. Uh-huh. racial stereotypes.
Netherlands Gundam. We can't go any further. Gundam has it's a windmill on front of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's supposed to help anything because if it puts its arms out front, it's going to hit the windmill. So it was bad, guys. I will say there was probably one really cool Gundam. I did like the Greece Gundam. Mm. Which had a built-in chariot and robotic horses and stuff.
Yeah.
But, that's as far as I'll go. That's my only support of G Gundam, is I liked that design. I thought it actually looked cool.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's a post-apocalyptic world where the colonies rule the Earth. And the thing is that the colonies, how they choose, they choose a leader.
Is based on who wins.
Yeah. Yeah. They're called Gundam Fighters, and... That also creates a solid reason as to why they're using humanoid robots, is that the Gundams basically wear the Gundams as a suit.
It's called
a mobile trace system where the Gundam is an exoskeleton. It follows their movements.
Yeah, because they're actually standing up inside the Gundam, and they're in a room inside the middle of it. And so if you punch with your fist, the Gundam punches, you know?
Yeah.
If you jump, the Gundam jumps. I'm not faulting that system. That's okay. I don't mind that. I don't need people at controls.
Yeah.
It's just the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah. It introduces a zombie story.
It's so weird.
It's weird, outlandish. Well, it's by the director of Giant Robo, if that indicates anything to you. Who introduced the world to a character who can kill people by snapping. But anyways, G Gundam. It's weird. Aside from what you mentioned, some of the designs of some of the better designs of some of them, it had a great soundtrack. Its theme song was really, really nice. And it was, it also gave the world, one of my favorite voice actors, Tomokazu Seki, who throughout this series destroyed his throat because he was screaming so much. It's kind of interesting. And the thing is that...
Damon Kashu?
Yeah, he was the main character who basically screams his attacks. Tomokazu Seki was a fledgling voice actor at this point in time. He wasn't a complete novice.
But this was his lead role, right?
Yeah, and... he ruined his throat towards the end. He was taking medication, using quick cures so that he could actually speak. But the thing is that after that, he gained much more experience as a voice actor to the point that he learned how to vocalize. He learned how to, scream without hurting his throat.
Yeah.
And the thing is that going back and reprising that role for video games and stuff like that, he couldn't do the voice anymore. It's kind of like that famous story with Michael Caine, I think, who is it Michael Caine?
I don't know.
Who lost his accent because he was doing so many different accents. He lost his accent, his British accent. So he had to relearn it. Was it Michael Caine or was it...
could be. I don't know. I've never heard this.
Oh, no. I think it's... what's his name? The guy who did Commissioner Gordon for the Dark Knight series.
Do I not have his name coming to my head?
A name escaping my head. But yeah, the guy who plays Commissioner Gordon, who does a flawless American accent, English American accent, but like, yeah, he's British, and he apparently lost his accent because he was doing other accents so much, so he had to get it coached back. But yeah, like, so Tomokazu Seki like went back to it, and he was like, I couldn't do the voice.
G Gundam, I would never recommend it. I do like we have the catchphrase, this hand of mine burns with an awesome fury that tells me to defeat you. I do like the idea that, like, I like watching the hand segment.
Yeah.
Because it kind of extends and branches out. It was basically beam saber technology, but like on the hand. And I was like, you know, it makes sense in a thing where everybody has all these crazy weapons and crap. If you can touch them, you can probably win. That makes sense to me. I mean, it's no more silly than anything else. But it is funny that he does have to scream that line every time. He can't just do it, right?
Yeah. Well, dude, it was a nutty series. I mean, it had a lot of catchy moments.
I remember it was balls to the nuts. I dropped it so hard.
They went all out on it. Like, I mean, God, at one point they even have a horse that's piloting one.
Yeah,
they like, have a mechanical horse, and its pilot is a horse. Yeah. So yeah,
that's a thing. That's a thing that happens, people.
Yep.
But apparently, it was successful enough.
Yeah. And let's see. So first came G Gundam, and then W and X. I'm going to go back to W. Don't worry about this. But
which is
kind of a letter trilogy. Like, these three kind of became their own sort of trilogy. They're completely unrelated, side story, but they're a different subset of Gundam that feels separate from even the other AU Gundam.
No, and that's absolutely true. Because basically, these three, Gundam X, Gundam Wing, Gundam G, are very, very different series from one another. They're all completely different.
Yeah.
But they do... Whether it's success or failure, they absolutely shape all the Gundams that come later.
Yeah.
There is nothing, about, like, as silly as G Gundam might be, Shining Finger returns.
Yeah.
In other series.
Yep.
It does exist. It is something that has carried on. But it's basically set the kind of worlds you will get in Gundam. Yeah. You either get UC or you get a world similar to one of these three. Most of the time, not all the time. Of course, there are totally redone. But these were basically three experiments to see if we can continue Gundam without without UC.
Yeah.
And I'll agree with that.
Yeah. So what came next was Gundam Wing, which, as I mentioned in the last episode, was... also their Sunrise reaching out to the female audience. Mm-hmm. So you had five Pretty Boy Gundams.
Yep.
Five Pretty Boy Gundam pilots. Yep. And also, another thing is that, well, this is something that was introduced in G, I should actually go back to G and mention, is that they introduced that, like, all the major characters have a Gundam.
Yeah.
Like, in the UC stuff, there was generally only one or two Gundams, if that. But... Yeah. This series, the GW Wing and X, introduced the concept of everybody's got one.
Yes, yeah. Like, they're still more powerful, way more powerful than mass production. They're still rare, but if you're following somebody, they have a Gundam. So Wing is an interesting one. Of course, Wing is the first Gundam I saw, like many people.
Yeah.
I watched it first run when it came out on Toonami.
Yep,
good serialized story. I was never quite into it as much as other people, but that is because I feel that Wing as a series meanders a bit.
Yeah.
It goes, like, it has some really good ideas, but every once in a while it just kind of goes into this weird holding pattern where nothing really quite seems as important as it should be, but we're just kind of holding out. I maintain that Wing is a great series if you start at the final story arc. Like, if you start where Miliardo Peacecraft... It takes Epion instead of Wing Zero when he trades it off. If you start pretty much with that episode and pick up with the final arc, you have an interesting series with a very compelling villain. It's basically the villain that's the most interesting. And it brings...
I mean, even the two villains are actually the most interesting, in my opinion. Like, oh, not just Milliard, but also Trace, the other, his Milliard's former superior.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, they're very interesting villains. And, like, Wing has some good things, because it's about pacifism, and how the fact that pacifism only works if everybody's a pacifist.
Yeah.
But that maybe it's worth fighting to protect the pacifists. It's a very Japan thing, because Japan is technically a pacifist nation. They don't have an army.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't have an official army.
Don't have an official army, you know, and it was in the Constitution for years. And so, yes, of course, everything that that Peacecraft does, Relina, Peacecraft does, is, you know, it's kind of an allegory for this, like, romanticized version of Japan facing this world where they are beset by superpowers that some want to be the righteous ones to protect pacifism, but how can you protect pacifism without basically spitting in the face of pacifism?
Yeah.
And
so it also, another thing is that it introduced, like, one thing I really glommed on was the fact that, like, they introduce, well, they bring in the concept of drone warfare. And the fact that
came in.
Yeah, drone warfare, it becomes useless when both sides have drones. It just becomes who has more
drones,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoever has more drones wins. And there's a character, the enemy, the one of the bosses, I guess, is his whole thing is that war needs to have consequences.
Yes.
Otherwise, it just becomes just a battle of who has more stuff. Right. So, like, people have to die.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's, well, it's,
and
ugly.
I mean, it's more disgusting than that, right?
Yeah.
Because what it really is when it comes down to it, here's some spoilers, but the reason I like the final arc is because that's where all this comes to a head, right?
Yeah.
Basically, you know, they've done, the whole series has been fighting these kind of half-aborted wars and invasions.
Yeah.
And regardless of which side everybody's on, you know, it's happened like this. And Milliardo Peacecraft has gone from, you know, the bad guy side to reformed good guy to basically, in the end, the main villain. And the reason he does this is because he comes to the very simple thing of, if people see these wars and don't think they have a consequence, then there's only one logical thing to do. And it's to make a war so bad, so violent, with such a high cost that no one can ignore how high that cost was and will never, ever want to war again.
Yeah.
It's like, that's basically what it is make an example so profound that no one will want to war again. And I will say that as a middle schooler at the time, that really resounded with me. I was like, that's, I get it. I get where he's coming from. And is he evil? He's not evil in any sense. Like, he would never say what he is doing is right.
Yeah.
He would say it's necessary, but he would never argue that it's right.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to this kind of thing where it eventually becomes kind of a thing of pessimism versus optimism for the future of humanity, personified in Peacecraft and Hero.
Yeah.
It's
a solid series. It's definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, it really picks up at the end. Like, that's kind of the thing. They meander.
Because
we skipped it, but, like, the beginning of the thing is basically five scientists were coming together to build a Gundam.
Yeah.
And then they, like, their dicks were too big for each other, and they were like, no, I have the biggest giant mecha penis. And so they basically all go off and create their own Gundam that's totally better than that other douche's.
Yeah.
And then they all send them, even though they're trying to get freedom for the colonies, they all send their Gundams, like, on missions, and it's a clusterfuck, right? They each have different missions, and they're in the same locations, and sometimes they're fighting against each other, sometimes they're fighting together, and it's just a total mess. Until eventually it starts to get sorted out. But that's, like, 30 episodes in?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
we're past
the halfway point.
Yeah, and, like, you've got characters, switching sides. You've got characters, like, they lose their Gundam, they get a new one. It's like,
I'll say the other really good thing I liked is, and this is going to tie to UC Gundam, right? In UC Gundam, it's all about the new types, right?
Mm-hmm.
These people who basically
are psychic.
Psychic, right? Yeah. I can't remember. Like, it's not that they really have, like, they have perfect situational awareness. Isn't that pretty much what it is?
Yeah. It's that. It's also their sense of empathy.
Right. And so because of that, like, basically Wing shows what happens if we don't reach it through evolution. We reach that through technology.
That's what the zero system is.
And the interesting thing about the zero system is, like, for those who can truly utilize it correctly, like, it drives people insane. Because what happens is, they show that how it works is, like, you'll be in a battle, and you'll see yourself, like, you'll see how you were going to fight, you'll see how everybody else is going to move, and then you die because you lost. Then it immediately restarts back at whatever the current moment is. And you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again until you find the way through the battle where you don't die.
Yeah, and it calculates. It's basically the butterfly effect thing where, like, it figures out what you need to do to survive. But in order to figure out what you need to do, it also shows you what you should. What you did that you shouldn't have done.
Yeah, in each of these loops, and it gets to the point where you actually get kind of a scary thing, which is, of course, how Peacecraft kind of comes up with his idea. He and Hero both sit in Zero and Epion respectively for such a long time that what they start doing is planning out. Like, not the battle, but months and years, right? Is there a way out of the war, basically, is kind of what it starts to become.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're hunting for answers in the future based on this system. And, that's a cool concept, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I like to know
about
that.
It's a series that introduces some pretty fascinating concepts that, honestly, probably could not have been introduced in what they originally had.
Yeah.
In what the original Gundam had set up.
Right, because if you have new types already, then such a system is just an equalizer. It's not a game changer, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the Zero system, and then, like, the final arc where that's kind of built around revelations from the Zero system is very cool. It's a good stuff.
As I said, it was geared towards a female audience, so it introduced, like, the five Gundam Pies who are all pretty boys. It's also
often shirtless. That's an important thing too.
Which it also does something interesting, which I don't think, I'm not sure. You may be able to correct me on this, but I don't think any other Gundam series has done in that the main heroine and the main protagonist, they don't have any others. It's never a harem. There's never a secondary heroine. There's never a secondary hero.
Yeah,
it's
that's
always
pretty darn
just
true.
The two. Like, pretty much every other series, you have the main character.
At least have
a
love triangle.
You'll have some sort of other character. I mean, it may be set from the start. Like, these two are going to end up together. Like, there's that. That's it. Starts this way. It's going to end this way. There's always the secondary heroine who comes in.
You bring that up.
Yeah,
but you're actually wrong. Because the very next series, Gundam X, does not have any sort of love triangle. It is those two. It's Tifa, Adil, and Gerardo from episode one. There is never any question.
You're right.
However, I don't know about 00, to tell you the truth. You'd probably know that better than me.
Well, 0080, War in the Pocket.
No. I mean, sorry, Gundam 00.
I'm saying also 0080, War in the Pocket, but that's completely because it has nothing to do with the series. But
that's
Romance
true.
Has absolutely nothing to do with that series.
But which I guess is a good segue into X, right?
Yeah. The second Gundam series that was canceled.
Yeah. Gundam X... that's infamy right there. It was canceled. Yeah. Guys, I hate to tell you this, but anime are not canceled. Like, ever. Because they're not made... Anime are not made like American TV. They're made closer to British TV, where you have a set number of episodes, and you make a series for that set number of episodes. And then production stops. There's no, oh, great, we're done with season one, let's make season two, and we'll just continue until we get canceled. That's not how Japanese TV works in any kind of Japanese TV.
Nothing
other than,
really,
like, game shows and stuff.
Nothing ever really relies on... getting good ratings so we can come back next season.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
Yeah, it's either set out to be multiple seasons.
Yeah, it's set out to be forever, which is like Dragon Ball or whatever. That's kind of a different thing.
Different, but yeah.
like other than like those things that are already such guaranteed hits and they're super long running already.
Yeah, like Naruto, Pokemon, Dragon,
Bleach,
yeah.
Pokemon, Detective Conan, that kind of stuff.
Sazae-san or Doraemon.
Or Doraemon, yeah. that have gone for decades and decades. But those are kind of a different thing. Most anime are greenlit for X amount of episodes. And you notice, like, the ones we just named, those never end. They never get time off. They're not seasons. They're just weekly, right?
Yeah.
Forever. One Piece included, right?
Yeah.
As far as normal anime production goes, outside of things like that, it's a set number of episodes. That's how long it is. And then basically everybody moves on to other projects, and maybe 6 months, a year later, they sit down with the studio heads and the original angel investors, and they go, all right, this is how much money we made. Think we can sell it to investors again and make a new series.
Yeah.
And that's how you get sequel series. But production has long since stopped. They may bait you like there's going to be a second season, but that's just what it is. Bait. Yeah. There's nothing. Nothing concrete, and nor can there be until DVD sales and merch sales are in, because that's where anime studios make their money. And we've talked about that before. But
I mean, some series, it may be a foregone conclusion that there's going to be.
Yeah.
But it's not in writing.
But that's super rare. But the only ones that I've ever been like, oh no, that's getting a second season, that would maybe Attack on Titan.
Yeah, that was about to say
that. That's wild success. That's worldwide success. To get something where you're like, oh yeah, that's getting a second one for sure.
Yeah, but going back where what we were talking about before the break, Cowboy Bebop, amazingly popular in the West, never had a second.
Never, not even slightly. Guys, it wasn't popular in Japan. I hate to tell you that. No. How many Japanese people have I met that have ever seen Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah,
not many. And the ones that I have, are basically Konoyoko fans.
Yeah,
and that's why they know it.
Yeah,
it did not. I mean, it wasn't terrible. Like, it wasn't like nobody watched it. It was just another show.
I mean, yeah,
yeah. It was popular enough to get a movie, but not popular enough to get anything else since, right?
And you can say that, like, well, the way it ends, there's no way they can continue it, you know, with that ending. But yeah,
trust me.
Around that.
Welcome to like, if you want to make money, you find it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It was. I'm not saying it was unpopular. I'm just saying it was an anime amongst millions. That's what it was. And
it was an anime struggling in the shadow of Evangelion. That where people were striving to find that second coming of Evangelion.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one series among a whole bunch.
And it's not a bad show. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like it is a. Like, and it's the same thing with Trigun. That's the other example that's really good. Not popular here. It was just a show. Real big success abroad. And it's the only time I can ever think of where years later, they come back and make a movie of it, not for Japan, but to capitalize on the international market. I don't know if that's ever been done since or before. But yeah, they had no illusions. Like, it wasn't popular enough in Japan to warrant a movie a decade out.
Yeah,
but in America, enough people like it that I assume it did okay. I don't know the sales figures, but it was kind of a crazy thing.
Trigun. We can probably actually talk about that when we talk about series that were popular in the West. But that was a bit of a weird. I do have some insight on that.
Yeah. But anyway, back to X. So X, comes out of one not very popular Gundam, which was.
G.
Gundam comes out of Gundam Wing, which was
pretty
popular.
It was really popular.
Yeah.
And as I said, it was inclusive to the female audience.
It hit the audience. Yeah. They didn't. I mean, they may have designed it with the hopes of hitting the female audience, but I don't think anybody could have planned that it would have just really hit the female audience like that. Because up until that point, can you think of a mech show that had a high female watch rating?
Not coming to mind. I mean, there might be some outliers, but there was nothing that was concrete and this is for the female audience.
Yeah, that they really hooked onto it.
Yeah.
Especially of a series that up until that point was, I mean, sure, there were female fans of the original Gundams, of course.
Yeah, but it was obviously designed primarily for a male audience.
Yeah. And so then we come out of that and we get another one that is just completely unlike Wing
or
G Gundam, which is Gundam X. Gundam X is, again, post-apocalyptic, but shortly after said apocalypse. And, it takes some of the good standard tropes, which is the colony drop, right?
Yeah.
And it just
That comes out a lot. I think that was one of the last... That was one of the things that... That was one of the major points of... towards the ending of Wing.
Yeah. How do you make a war so costly? Colony drop. That's what you do. Yeah. And this was basically showing what would have happened if the colony drop had worked, right? Yeah. And, the world is lawless, basically. There are a couple countries that have at least government in name.
Yeah.
But the Earth is so removed that there is no connection, like no communication between the colonies anymore. No one even knows if any of the colonies survived. Because in the end, what it became was they started to threaten to drop colonies. Earth built the Gundam X series, which are far more powerful than any other Gundam in any other Gundam. Like, there's no Gundam that comes close to the power of Gundam X in any other series, because it's a Gundam that has one purpose. It has a big giant gun that shoots colonies. That's what it does.
Yeah. Like, some people, you may argue that, like, Gundam Wing, like, Wing Zero. You might argue that was, like, really powerful. You might argue that the Tall Geese 3 from Endless Waltz was that powerful. But, you could say, alright, yeah, they were that powerful. Did you have multiples of them?
Yeah.
Like, did you have, like, units of them, like entire troop units of these things.
Yeah, and so in the final battle, guess what? Lots of colonies are dropped, lots of colonies are shot down. So nobody even knows if there's any colonies in space anymore. And you just, it's basically bands of roving mercenaries. We're back in Wild West. It's basically Wild West Gundams.
Yeah.
Right? With the mysterious ancient technology being mobile suits, right?
Yep.
And nobody can build a mobile suit anymore. That's not possible. You can't build a Gundam.
Yeah.
Now it's just whatever is remains from what used to be units of them, right? Yeah. You might find one that still works. But how do you even get parts for it, right?
This sort of setting, actually, I would guess, like, influenced Turn A Gundam. Like, because Turn A Gundam is very similar to that, where they're digging up ancient technology, which happens to be mobile suits.
Yeah,
but
and so kind of the story is, we again go back to the new type concept, where there is a girl who's a new type, and only a new type is capable of utilizing a Gundam X.
Yeah, the weapon system.
The weapon system
it requires a psychic link with. Well, the thing is that they're powered by a microwave station that's based on the moon.
Yeah, basically, is what happens is they have giant solar panels that come out of the back of the Gundam that will collect the energy from this laser on the moon.
Yeah.
It sends the microwave energy down, and then it powers up, and they can shoot this cannon that, its point is to shoot down colonies.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is. It's like lawless Earth, and this guy who, and this girl who, like I said, power couple from the start, stumble into the Gundam X. And that's basically what it is. It's kind of how the existence of a working Gundam X alters the course of the world.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like it destabilizes an already sort of a stabilized, unstable world.
Yeah, it basically serves as the catalyst for stabilizing the world, because to restabilize it, like, they needed a threat, and a Gundam X is a threat. There's nothing that can stop a Gundam X. Like, if it fires, your city is gone.
Yeah, and it also, as we mentioned, like the weapon system, the main weapon system of the Gundam X is powered by the microwaves from this moon station.
Yeah.
So the moon has to be out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It gives it a very limited capability. It sort of handicaps. Like, you have this end all weapon. Like, you fire that weapon, the fight's over.
Mm.
No question.
Yeah.
But it also, like, hamstrings it.
And that's
in
the
a
important
way,
thing.
Which that, makes it interesting.
Yeah, exactly. You have to, if you have something super powerful, it has to have its weakness. And that's the fact that if the moon is set, then it's not a particularly good Gundam. And that's kind of one of the things I really love it, especially the Gundam Double X, which is, of course, the upgraded version they get later. The Double X is a terrible Gundam.
Yeah.
It has either A, satellite cannon, B, standard action crap beam rifle, or C, a sword.
Yeah.
It's a crappy, crappy Gundam.
Yeah, it's like, it's not specialized in any way. Like,
it's the opposite. It's over-specialized. It is only good in one situation, and that situation is, I want to annihilate giant area and everyone in it. That is its sole purpose.
Yeah.
And unlike a lot of the Gundam series, it gets very metaphysical near the end. Talking about what exactly is a new type. What is the point of this? Are they the new evolution of humanity? If so, what does that mean? What as old humanity is our place in the universe? And is it, who decides this? The new types or the humans? Or Earth or space or whatever? And yes, it was canceled. But
because
that's,
it was
that's a time slot problem, not a story problem.
Yeah.
If you like post-apocalypse stuff, it's pretty good. The problem is, when you have your new Gundam and it airs the same time slot, I think same time slot, at least same night, but I think same time slot as a certain little anime called Neon Genesis Evangelion, you might have problems, because Gundam may be popular. Evangelion was a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah. As we have said before,
nothing lives up to that. Like, it changed not only mecha anime, but like set the standard for a generation of what anime could be.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Gundam X, you're good, but it's,
you're not that good.
It's like, oh, look, Bob Ross made this nice little painting of a field, and we're going to set that next to the Mona Lisa. Right. Both paintings.
Yeah.
I might think that tree is pretty damn pretty.
Got some happy
but
clouds.
One has been famous for 1,000 years, kind of thing. Not 1,000 years. I know when it was painted, but you get the idea.
Yeah. One is a generational defining thing. Yeah. So.
Or maybe it has been 1,000 years. Jeez. Maybe I don't know when the Renaissance was. Perhaps. No, not quite 1,000 years. But. X was it's one of those things where I'm happy that at least they weren't retreading, right? They went their own way, and it was good enough for what it was. I think that some of the characters were relatively bland.
Mm-hmm.
The Mentor character is by far the most interesting. He is an ex-new type.
Yeah.
He's a new type who burned himself out in the final battle using his Gundam X to try to save Earth.
Yeah.
And so, that's an interesting thing. Like, how does a new type get burnt out? How can you be burnt out? It's evolution, right? And his story is really interesting.
Yeah.
The main character, though, is...
So a little...
He's blank.
Cookie cutter, yeah.
And
he's,
Tifa...
He's your standard, yeah.
Yeah, and Tifa Adil is just good, right? Mm. She's a good girl. That's her personality. I want you to be a good girl. Okay, congrats. That's Tifa Adil. So, it's a thing.
It also Gundam X. It also created the tagline "Is the moon out?" That's another one that survived past the air. The how long it aired, but
I don't think. Can you think? I don't think in any series ever, before or since, has there been anything as powerful as the Gundam X. Because it's the super
Turn
weapon,
A,
right?
Technically.
Oh yes, okay. Technically, Turn A Gundam. That's true. Which actually came right after. But that's a different thing.
Yeah, that's a different, and we kind of entered the conversation in the UC, but it was the Turn A, to briefly restate, it was basically written as the final ending point of every Gundam.
Of every Gundam. Every Gundam leads to Turn A Gundam. Yeah. Does not matter which alternate reality we're in, they all eventually become Turn A Gundam, which is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
yeah.
That's it's the point where all Gundams become the same. Or actually, it's implied that somewhere before that time, all the universes collide into one in some very strange way. But yeah. So, like, that's a thing I consider Turn of Gundam UC, but it's technically everything.
Yeah. So. Getting to concepts, G Gundam, it made the fighting. It was more about the fighting than, like, a lot, like, everything before that was about the shooting. It made the Gundams into fighters. It also brought in the concept of nanotechnology.
Yeah.
Which is something that comes back in Turn A Gundam.
Yeah.
Gundam Wing retreads some of the drone technology. It talks about war itself. What is war? Yes. Whereas it focuses, like, as I've said, like, the UC Gundams are all, like, well, all the Gundams are about war, but Gundam Wing focuses specifically on war, I think, more than most.
Yeah, war versus peace. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, more than pacifism in war. That's what it's about.
What war is, the concept of war itself.
Yeah, and it does a really good job of also showing down in the trenches, because as the boys travel around, they travel the world and enter in and out of various societies in this world. And we see how the kind of never-ending, slowly but surely proxy war changes things. Yeah. It's not the deepest thing, but no, it's good. It's a good first step.
And Gundam X delves into, as you said, like the concept of evolution, the aftermath, if you will.
Yeah. What happens when the hero doesn't save the day? Yeah. That's Gundam X.
Yeah. Wayward Podcast is part of the oneofus.net podcast network. You can follow us on Twitter at waywardpodcast or send your comments or questions to waywardpodcast@gmail.com.